Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. The reaction to expect when you start talking about high-speed rail in Texas is the eye roll and the shoulder shrug. We've all heard this before. Lots of talk, but no action. But now they say this time is different. TxDOT is on board. Mexico is planning their own high-speed rail that will go to the border near Laredo, could link up to San Antonio. And still other parts of the nation, they have high-speed rail projects, but they don't seem to be doing much better than Texas. So what we want is a reality check about high-speed rail. Is this going to happen and when? Joining us this half hour, Thomas Zollner. He's a journalist and the author of the book Train. He's been covering high-speed rail. And Stephen Mattingly, he is professor of civil engineering at UT Arlington. He wrote a recent feasibility study about high-speed rail for TxDOT. And we invite you to join the conversation. Give us a call, 614-8980. Do you support high-speed rail in Texas? What do you want to see happening? Are you ready to jump on board right now? 614-8980. You can also email your questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org. So Stephen Mattingly, professor of civil engineering, UT Arlington, you wrote a feasibility study. Is it feasible, high-speed rail in Texas?
So the study that we did was looking at existing TxDOT right-of-way, and we're seeing whether the high-speed rail would work within the existing TxDOT right-of-way and what speeds that it could obtain. So it's feasible from a technical perspective, but not necessarily from a cost perspective. Cost wasn't part of our analysis and wasn't what TxDOT tasked us with undertaking.
Okay, so the right-of-way, TxDOT right-of-way already existing. So does that mean like a down the middle of I-35 or something?
It would be likely alongside I-35, maybe in the median. It could be elevated in certainly in some sections along the I-35 corridor. We looked at the I-35 corridor, I-45, and State Highway 6 and I-20 between Dallas and Fort Worth.
And what about I-10 between San Antonio and Houston?
We did not look at that one. That was one of the corridors that we left out of the analysis, primarily because if you're looking at trying to connect the major cities, the T-bone configuration tends to be a little bit more efficient, but as far as cost goes, but not necessarily as efficient from a travel time perspective.
So then according to this plan that you're talking about, I would have to go up to, Austin and then shoot over to Houston if I wanted to go that way?
It could be either Austin or, in our configuration that we looked at, it would actually have been all the way up to Waco.
So that's not – that doesn't seem like it's effective. All right, and speed. So what are you talking about for speed?
The speeds, we primarily focused on a technology that was about 185 miles per hour and looked at how well that train would work within the existing right-of-way. The I-35 corridor is somewhat constrained and does not accommodate the high-speed rail as well, especially in the urban areas, whereas the I-45 corridor outside of the urban areas, it performed wonderfully and was able to maintain very high speeds.
So we're talking 100 miles an hour, 80 miles an hour?
185 miles an hour.
185 miles an hour. Wow, that is high-speed rail. All right, so let's bring in Thomas Zollner into the conversation. You've written the book Train. You've looked at high-speed rail projects around the globe, and some of them are right on target. They're doing great. Others, not so much. Tom, what can we learn? What should we know? What mistakes did other people make in their high-speed projects around the globe? We can not make those mistakes in Texas.
Texas needs to get rid of the illusion that these ever make money. They don't. And when you start the argument from those on that economic footing, you're having the wrong discussion. It's almost like, you know, expecting public schools to make money. That's not the point. And in fact, if your high-speed train is making money, I'd say that your fares are too high. You're ripping off the public. The real benefit you get from these projects are purely external, and you can't really look at them in terms of a bottom-line dollars and cents proposition. What you get is less cars off the road, and most importantly, you get more planes out of the sky. I think it's sort of just criminally wasteful that the Dallas-Houston corridor is such a highly trafficked air corridor, because technologically that's really not a route for a plane. That is a job for a train.
So let me ask you that about that, Stephen Mattingly. Is there a corridor available from TxDOT that could a train between Houston and Dallas?
The I-45 corridor would be suitable for accommodating it. It would struggle in the urban areas, but in the rural areas, it would be very adequate for use. I believe, though, that the Japan Central Rail is not planning on using the TxDOT right-of-way and is considering some other freight rail right-of-way or something like that for their proposed system.
Right, so that is a purely private plan from a Japanese company that wants to link Houston and Dallas-Fort Worth with a high-speed rail. And they seem like they're two years from now they plan on doing a groundbreaking. So, Tom, does that seem doable?
Well, what the professor is talking about there is what's called a blended system, and we're having that debate right now in California, particularly like when, you know, this high-speed rail approaches the urban areas. That's where the land becomes very expensive, and that's where you're going to have a lot of what are called grade crossings, which are places where the rail intersects the road. Everyone in Texas is familiar with those. What you really need with high-speed rail is a dedicated corridor all the way through. For a couple reasons. One, this is what passengers expect. You know, they don't want to, click onto conventional tracks as you're approaching an urban area because it slows the ride down. You get a much greater danger of collisions with automobiles. You really want that dedicated corridor that's only high-speed rail. That, of course, as you've already guessed, is very expensive as you get close, for example, in this case, to Dallas or Houston.
All right. I've heard prices of $100 million or more, maybe double, maybe triple that per mile on building a high-speed rail system. Tom, what's the good number? What's the sweet spot?
No, it's not $100 million per mile. For a route like that to Dallas to Houston, you're looking, I mean, using current prices, it's probably closer to $50 billion, but nevertheless, it's going to be steep. And as I said before, you cannot expect to recoup that money through fare box revenue.
Right. You say don't expect these trains to pay for themselves. I mean, I'm still waiting for I-35 to pay for itself. That hasn't happened. So, Steve Mattingly, you did not look at cost in your feasibility study. So we're just looking at the engineering, if it's feasible, if this is something that's actually something could happen?
Right. So we were looking at the engineering side of things and looking at the technical feasibility of whether the corridor could accommodate it and maintain high speeds. The other thing that we were looking at was the potential for TxDOT to get involved in development in and around stations at the urban cores or near the urban cores.
Okay, we're talking about high-speed rail in Texas. TxDOT, or Texas Transportation Department, is looking at this. There is some serious talk. We're hearing about a Japanese plan to build a rail system starting groundbreaking in 2 years. We want to hear what you think. We're going to get to our phone calls, 614-8980, 614-8980, when we come back from the break. This is The Source on KSTX. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Texas, we've got wide open spaces. We know that if you're going to go from point A to point B in this state, you better have gas up and be ready for a long ride or get on the airplane and flying to like Dallas from San Antonio. Even though it's not that far, it's an all-day affair because getting to the airport and getting through security and then getting out of the airport, I mean, that's a hassle. Wouldn't it be better to be able to get on a train, a high-speed rail, swoosh up to Dallas in just a couple of hours, pull into a metro station, and then get onto their light rail system that they have in the city and go where you need to go? Well, it's not high-tech science fiction, but it is hard to make happen because we've not seen it happening here yet so far. We're talking about high-speed rail in Texas and if that's going to become a reality eventually. Thomas Zollner, he's a journalist. He's written a lot about high-speed rail. He's written the book Train about different plans and around the world. And Stephen Mattingly, he's a professor of civil engineering at UT Arlington, and he wrote the feasibility study that went to TxDOT recently. And let's get to some calls because we got a lot of people who really want to chat about this. Our number is 614-8980. Robert has called in. Robert, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Robert, you there?
I'm here. I'm right here.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, I have a limited experience riding a couple trains in Europe, and they were very expensive. So you say these trains aren't going to pay for themselves. Have there been any projections on what the ticket cost might be for the end user?
Okay, Robert, thanks for that call. So Thomas Zollner, you've ridden on a lot of these trains. Are they expensive? And expensive, I guess, is a relative term compared to what?
Well, compared to the continuing cost of wasting all that fuel, creating needless congestion in the skies, I mean, if you look at a total balance sheet, I think this is actually the right thing to do for Texas. But if you apply the economics in a narrow fashion, and say, well, you know, are we going to pay for this thing through farebox revenues? No, you're probably not. As I understand it, Texas Central is a completely private enterprise, taking no money from the federal government, unlike California, which is relying on federal and state subsidies largely to pay for the train. And I really think that I'm only speculating here, but I think part of the strategy for Texas Central is to sort of start the project and then hope that government takes an interest and eventually contributes.
Who in the United States, what project do you think is going to be completed first? I mean, we need something to look at and see the benefit of. Move out of the theory into the practice.
Best case scenario, California 2028. We'll have a 2.5-hour express between L.A. San Francisco. That's not pie in the sky either, by the way. The business plan is mature. The ground is going to be broken next year, and the only question, really the major question, is whether the governor of California 10-20 years from now, whoever that is, and the president of the United States 10-20 years from now, whoever that is, maintains the interest in this program to keep providing two-fisted executive support.
That's 14 years from now. Let's get Joey on the line. He's called in. Joey, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Up in the East Coast, on the East Coast of the United States, you have the train, you can ride the bus, you have many alternatives up on the East Coast, and the Xcela train is a high-speed train, and they ride the train on a regular basis up there. San Antonio in the 1960s, we used to have several places in San Antonio where you could catch a train. Now we have one place, and that's down there off of Heston Street. And if you took the Greyhound bus, you could beat Amtrak. And Dallas, going up there to Dallas, the Greyhound bus would get there in maybe a couple of hours.
Right. So, but Joey, we're talking about high speed rail, which would be a lot faster than that.
Yes, it would. And we need more dependable rail that you don't have to stop and wait for the freight trains.
Right. Okay, Joey, thanks for calling in. Appreciate your comments and your observations. Edith has also called in. Edith, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I have a couple comments. First off, the last caller, it's comparing Amtrak and high-speed rail like they have in Europe. It's like comparing a Corvette or a Porsche in a 1969 Chevrolet Impala station wagon. You know, it's just not realistic. But it's a wonderful thing, and I have to disagree. It's not super expensive. I've used it several times. And especially for vacation travel, if you know your schedule ahead of time, and it doesn't have to be months, sometimes just a few days or a week, you can get discounts. And I much prefer sit in a wonderful, comfortable, clean seat on a high-speed rail than trying to struggle across the passes in the Alps in my own car, my own driving, and being totally exhausted in a nervous wreck.
So what countries did you ride?
Germany and Italy. And Germany pretty much from through the middle, you know, from one end, Munich to Frankfurt to Kassel. And as a matter of fact, one of my brother-in-law's business provided for part building of this train. And it's not always pretty, but in Texas it'd be ideal because in Europe they cut through hills, through river valleys. You know, it goes pretty much straight. But I think we need to join the 21st century or whatever comes after this.
All right, Edith, thank you for your call. I appreciate that. So let's get, you know, Tom Zollner, you know, you've ridden those rails. She says it's not that expensive.
She's right, and we should clarify expensive. It's very expensive for the government. It's going to be very expensive for Texas Central Rail to buy the land and lay the tracks. But, yeah, for passengers, it's actually a bargain. And if I could talk about what Edith said in the previous caller, it's ironic that in a state like Texas, which whose economy depended so much on the railroad for much of its history, that it should have turned its back on the railroad, so in my view, shamefully. And so this is one way that you know, one of the strongest state economies in the nation can really show the rest of the United States how it's done.
Steve Mattingly, professor of civil engineering at UT Austin, you did that feasibility study for TxDOT. We've seen several news reports, and I've talked to people involved in this project in Mexico. They're building a rail line from Mexico City all the way up to the border, and they want a connection to San Antonio. Is that something that is feasible?
Once again, technically feasible from a ridership perspective, that would be a lot harder for me to think that it would be strongly feasible. It just depends on the magnitude of trips that you have occurring by plane right now between San Antonio and the parts that would be and the cities that would be served by that high-speed train.
Yeah, mainly Monterey. There seems to be a lot of connection between that.
If there's a lot of trips right now, then it could conceivably be feasible. But the kind of air traffic that we're seeing between Dallas and Houston would be along the lines of a million passengers per year.
Okay. All right, let's get another caller
in each direction.
Another caller, Mr. Valdez is called in. Or Valdez, go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, yeah.
And we apparently lost the call, but I can tell from my notes from the call screener that he was going to ask, where is the pushback coming from on this? So, Tom Zollner?
Oh, well, anyone who thinks that government shouldn't be doing big infrastructure projects is probably not going to like high-speed rail.
Okay, and what about, I mean, when you do big infrastructure projects, you see things like job creation. We have business growth. So why not?
Well, there's no question. I mean, yes, this does mean a lot of jobs, but it also has, the unpalatable odor of Keynesian economics around it. And for some, particularly in Texas, you know, that just reeks of what they would call socialism.
And it seems like right now the media is not in favor of high-speed rail. Aside from you, I've seen a lot of articles out there saying looking not too well on how things are going in California.
Yeah, I mean, is it easy to find, reasons to criticize it? Yeah, most definitely, we should discuss this. I'd like to think that I'm not a romantic about this either. I'd like to think of myself as a really hard-headed pragmatist and say that this is something that is expensive. It's not perfect. It has a large physical footprint, as I'm sure the professor would agree. But, you know, it also does, when all the shouting is over, make a lot of sense.
There was this this proposal from Elon Musk about the Hyperlink. It says, forget high-speed rail. Put this in place. It'll work a lot faster and a lot better. So, Tom, have you looked at that?
I have looked at that. It's unproven technology. Japan's had high-speed rail since 1964, and it's proven to be a clean, safe, effective method of getting people from place to place, and I'm more in favor of that.
So, and Stephen Mattingly over at UT Arlington, you wrote a feasibility study looking into engineering. Is there a feasibility looking at the economics?
We haven't looked at the economics as far as how much the train would be able to earn in revenue or anything like that. The only economic assessment that we did was related to the potential for development in and around the station locations, and that there clearly would be plenty of opportunities for commercial development to occur in those sites.
Yeah, but you don't want too many stations. That's one of the observations that you made, right, Tom?
I would totally agree with that.
Yes, that's how you kill a high-speed project, is by making it stop too many times. All right, thank you so much for joining us. Thomas Zollner, he's a journalist. He's been writing about the transportation of high-speed rail, written the book Train. It's a good read about train projects around the world if you're interested in that. Stephen Mattingly, professor of civil engineering at UT Arlington. He wrote a feasibility study about Texas high-speed rail for TxDOT. And this is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Thank you for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies is executive producer and host. Paul Flav is the show's producer. Management and oversight comes from VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Chris Udaly is the TPR web editor. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.